Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many, many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Hello? Hello, is this on? Are we back? Oh, goodness. Oh, okay, it's been a while here, folks. Welcome back. Let me explain, true believer. The grave course of events set in motion by the mad titan Thanos that wiped out half the universe and fractured the Avengers' ranks also fractured the ranks of the Gentlemen Nerds, losing half of our cast and staff. So, a decision was made to go into an extended hiatus rather than subject listeners to shows featuring Dr. Gonzo talking about legal issues and yours truly ranting on about the universal monster minutia. But now that the remaining Avengers, Captain America, Iron Man, Hawkeye, Black Widow, the Hulk, War Machine, Ant-Man, and the Mighty Thor have taken one final stand and restored the galaxy together, we can report that we are back to full ranks. Reunited, and it feels so good. Reunited in the Lobot Lounge are Mark Finn.
Whatever it takes.
Aaron DeArrive.
You know, there was this rat running around. I just saw him run out the back. It was weird. It was a rat.
I love that rat. And I am your host and emotional touchstone, Joseph Fotinos. Welcome as we finally gather to discuss Marvel Studios' grand conclusion to 22 films, Avengers Endgame.
Oh my God, I'm so glad to see you guys. It was like there was this flash and then nothing. And then I showed back up. It was crazy. I don't get it.
Yeah, me neither.
A few things have changed around here. We lost half of our group here at the lounge. It was lonely. I'll be honest. It was quite lonely.
We didn't lose Maximilian, I see.
No, because he's not technically alive.
So there is a workaround to this whole Thanos snapping.
By the way, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to confirm something that the Russo brothers did confirm for fans. And it was kind of a weird thing, but it's true. When Thanos snapped half of all life in the universe away, he literally snapped all life, including microscopic life, all plant life, all animal life, every bit of life. So the Mad Titan's incredibly insane theory of helping people survive by reducing the amount of people is stupid because he's also reduced the amount of food that that people eat. I mean, he's just brought it back to status quo. But no one's going to argue with him and say, hey, Thanos, that's a stupid idea.
Yeah. So many people had to start taking probiotics because of that crazy Titan.
Right.
That's right. I lost half of my gut flora.
It was
nuts.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And mind you, Thanos could have snapped his finger and made twice as many resources, right? But no.
No.
He doesn't think of positives. He thinks of negatives. Not to mention the fact that, you know, it's still going to be social classes. Sure, we have half of the people gone, but half of the people are still here. And I bet there's some rich people in that half, and there's some poor people in that half. Yeah. And the rich people are still going to get all the resources, and the poor people are still going to suffer. That's just true math.
It is Bill Murray from Meatballs. It just doesn't matter because all the really good-looking girls are still going to date the guys from Camp North Star because they've got all the money.
Yeah. Well, you know, Thanos made a point of he didn't want to pick, right? He wanted it to be completely random, rich, poor. It didn't matter. When if he had just stopped to think about it for a little while and he would have thought about, you know, why are all those resources being consumed the way they are? Who's controlling all of that? But anyway, I digress.
Well, it
was a dumb plan.
It was a mad plan.
A mad plan. Which, by the way, in the comics make more sense because he was really doing it for a chick.
He wanted to impress a girl. Yeah.
He wanted to impress
but
Dad.
I recall, and listeners, you can go back in time and check the website and listen to the old podcast that we did on the Avengers when we talked about Thanos, the very first time we talked about this, and I recall Mr. DeArrive saying in no uncertain terms, it can't be the fact that he's doing it for death. That's stupid.
And it is, by the way. As comic books go, that's a really stupid reason to wipe out half the life in the universe. But now that his rationale we saw was, I'm just, you know, it'll make things easier for the survivors if I wipe out half of all life in the universe. I don't know. The chick thing, I'm starting to rethink it. Maybe it's not so dumb.
I think Hawkeye would certainly have disagreed with that assessment of the situation.
You know what?
See what I did there? I do.
Yeah. Because we open with Hawkeye. We open with poor Hawkeye, with his family, his beautiful family. They're having a picnic. The boys, his daughter, his beautiful wife. He's teaching his daughter how to fire an arrow. It's like Norman Rockwell. It's beautiful. And of course, we know what's coming. Dust.
Yep.
And he's all by himself.
Yeah. Great way to remind you of all the events of the last film.
Yeah. And how much it hurt. You know, we felt for him because we were there on Titan. We watched poor Spider-Man disintegrate and say he didn't want to go. It was tough. It was tough. And it's no less tough now.
Yeah. And I knew that was going to be that they were going to have to address it. And I knew that, of course, was going to be how you involve Hawkeye. I didn't expect the whole family to go. I thought, you know, either the kids would go or the wife would go or, you know, one or the other. And so for him to lose everything, and especially because that's part of his core, you know, that's his anchor. Hawkeye's family, you know, the whole thing of him setting up this secret farmhouse off the grid as part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. deal was his emotional support, you know, and it's certainly something that they, ever since they introduced it, they've made great references to it, you know, in Civil War when Scarlet Witch says, Clint, what are you doing here? And he says, disappointing my kids, you know? As soon as he turned around and everybody was gone, I recalled that. And it just, it was a great way to kick off a movie that for the first 30 minutes is pretty much a series of shocks to the heart.
Yeah. Well, another great segue, Mr. Finn, because shocks to the heart, we think of the guy with the reactor core in his chest, and that's Tony Stark, who, by the way, doesn't need it. He just put it back in because of, you know, just in case. really? Really, Tony? But he's stuck in space. He's on the Milano. I think it was the Milano. It was Star-Lord's ship. So they're in the Milano. He and Nebula. And they're dying slowly. Yeah. And it's a difficult thing to watch, but him accepting his fate, leaving messages for Pepper via the helmet. We've seen a lot of this in the trailer. And that's we knew it was coming. We also know that he's going to be rescued. No offense. No, spoiler alert. He's going to be rescued. Yeah. Of course he is.
Yeah. But you know, those moments with Nebula and Tony on that ship were just, you know, again, so well done. So well done. I was surprised by how much I ended up really liking Nebula after this movie. I wasn't terribly interested in her before, but, you know, after seeing what they were doing with her, how they introduced her, her arc that we would eventually see through the rest of the movie. She's fantastic. You know, I love the actress, who's just brilliant. But, Nebula has shot up in rank as far as characters that I think are pretty amazing.
And they had those lovely moments, like playing paper football and Nebula, you know, saying, I want to try again. And having those moments of her gently tucking Tony in.
Oh, my God, that was awesome. Awesome. Yeah. She tucks him in.
Sets him up right, you know, so that he can, you know, meet his fate head on.
Yeah.
And pretty much walks off. You know, there's an efficiency, and there's also a vestige of humanity, you know, in that action. That's wonderful. Yeah. They've gotten really good at making the most of character in those small moments. There's really not a lot of wasted film or a lot of wasted space for development. So that's great.
No, they did that well. And as we said, we know that he's going to be rescued. And, well, sure enough, the most powerful character in the Marvel Universe apparently shows up in a bright white light like an angel to rescue them. And, of course, it is Carol Danvers herself, Captain Marvel.
AKA the Green Lantern of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's true. Yeah, very true.
And it's not a, I say that lovingly and affectionately because I love Green Lantern.
Right. Well, I mean, and so she, you know, towed like an intergalactic mater, tows them all the way back to Earth and brings Tony and Nebula back to Earth, where they are reunited with Pepper. Thank God she was still alive. Because she was in fact pregnant, so it's nice to see that she's still there. But you know, brings us all back to square one.
And it's not a happy reunion either. In fact, what I like about it is that it is as soon as he gets the strength back to be angry,
right.
Tony rage quits, and that wasn't what I was expecting it to be, but as soon as I was watching it, I was like, yeah, that's it. You know, when he says, isn't that who we are, the Avengers? You know, wow. So
we're
good.
We're not the Revengers. It's all at once touching and happy and terribly sad, because Tony, he's severely malnourished. He's hallucinating. He's angry. He's lashing out. He can't believe that they lost. He's ready to throw in the towel. And of course, Cap is Cap. America's ass. He is Captain America. That's the one thing about Cap that I will honestly say that I love about Chris Evans and his portrayal of Cap is that even at the worst, he's still a shining beacon. He's still mm-hmm. someone to look up to. He's still, you know, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And let's take this. And now I'm just like, what are you talking about? We're done. It's over. We can't do anything. And Cap's not giving up. I can do this all day, he says, right? And that's the truth of it. That's Cap. That's what I love about the character.
Yeah. They've probably more so than any other of the Avengers, I think they were able to accurately and successfully translate what makes Cap so appealing into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think the way Chris Evans has chosen to portray him is a real credit. You know, I think it's a real testament. He's done just a fantastic job. And the fact that we can all go through Civil War and on the other end of it still have that debate outside of the movie is also, you know, it's just proof that they've really put some thought into it. And I think that's also one of what's going to make this – what makes this movie so good is, it's 3 hours. But it's 3 hours with 60 hours in front of it, you know. And those 60 hours are full of character moments and humor and heart and stuff that we all think is really cool and little moments. And so nobody's seeing this cold. You when you come into it, you see it with all that baggage. And that's part of what makes this so powerful. When Tony says, "I lost the kid," I started crying again. Yeah. It's just like, oh, my God, you know?
Yeah,
so, it's tough. Yeah, it's super tough.
Our heroes have this crazy idea, and that is, you know, let's just go get the son of a bitch, is what Cap says. And by the way, I like Cap in this film dropping a couple of curse words every now and then. It's a nice kind of breakdown of his once stoic language. You know, he used to do that. And now he says things like, shit, or, you know, son of a bitch, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I kind of like that development in his character. But they notice that Thanos uses the glove again. There's an energy surge. He snapped again, or he did something with the glove again. They could trace him. They know where he is. Captain Marvel, by the way, is a big gun. She is planetary big gun, galaxy-wide big gun. So now it's like, well, let's just go get him now. We know where he is. Thor, who's been sitting sullenly in the corner eating, just absolutely beside himself, the fact that he almost got Thanos and didn't, decides, I like her, let's do this. So they do. They literally just fly over to where Thanos is on the planet. They crash down on him, and let's visit with Josh Brolin here for a second. We see Thanos, and I don't know about you guys, but I was a little surprised that he was that beat up. He looked rough,
right?
You know.
Well, I mean, I think when I saw that he looked the way he looked, you know, we knew he'd use the glove again, but we didn't know for what purpose.
Right.
And of course, once he explains.
Right.
What happened, then we understand why he looks like the way, I mean, his skin is charred and, you know, he looks like he's, again, just been through a fire or something. Of course, come to find out, he used the glove to destroy the stones.
Yeah.
And that was the result. He unleashed so much power that it
nearly killed
part
him.
Of him.
Yeah,
yeah.
It nearly killed him.
which the Avengers then finished the job. They come in like gangbusters, and there's, you know, Captain Marvel takes him by the neck, and Thor doesn't waste a single moment, lops his arm off to get the glove off, just right. Cuts it right off. I mean, God, if they had done that, you know, with his initial throw in yes. Infinity War. But anyway, you know, and then they realize, oh, my God, what have you done? You know, we can't fix it. Their right. hope, their one hope was to get the stones, get Thanos, fix it, reverse it. It'll be fine. And they can't. And everyone thinks he's lying, but Nebula knows her father, and she very poignantly says, my father is many things. A liar is not one of them.
Yeah.
You know. So it's left to the despairing Asgardian to make the final cut, the final very brutal cut. And believe this is all within the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly Thanos doesn't have a head. Yeah. It was like, what the hell? Oh, my God.
No, I remember as we were sitting there watching it. Yeah. There was this moment of like, oh, okay. they just cut off Thanos' head. What's going to happen now?
Right. Right. But then we go into a 5 year later thing, which is necessary in I guess in this situation, because we see these characters and they're carrying on, difficult, but they're carrying on. I love Cap's reintroduction after the 5 years. I love that he's sitting in a social group, talking to people who are getting over the snap and sharing intimate stories. And what makes Cap so gosh darn cool, I didn't cuss for him. Is he sitting next to a gentleman who's talking about a relationship with another man. And, you know, it's Captain America. He's from the 40s. And he's sitting next to this guy talking about, I went on a date with a guy, and I started to cry, and he started to cry, and it was, I think I'm going to call him again. And Cap's like, good for you.
Yeah.
You know what? Good for you. You've made that first step. And above everything else, just that little bit of Cap, who inspires everyone, no matter what your color, creed, sexual orientation, nationality, it's Captain Flippin' America. You know, I warmed to that so much to watch that happen. You know, they're all doing their thing. Black Widow is just she's another mess, but they're trying to, you know, be Avengers still. And it's like Avengers on, you know, on Valium. They're all kind of like, there's a quadrant over here I'm going to check out. Cool.
There's an issue. And by the way, so. In that scene, my little favorite Easter egg of that whole scene is when Okoye is reporting, and she's saying there's some kind of, you know, underwater earthquake or something, you know, in the middle of the Atlantic. And Black Widow's like, well, what is Wakanda doing about it? She goes, nothing. It's in the middle of the Atlantic. you know, I don't know for those who are not hardcore comic fans, there is a big connection in the comics between Atlantis and Wakanda. They are linked. And in the Infinity War comics, when Thanos snaps his finger, it creates these aftershocks, these earthquakes, which devastates Atlantis, which drives Namor, the Submariner, up to the surface to start dealing with whatever it is that is happening.
I completely missed that.
And so the fact that, and again, you know, we know that nothing is put in this movie without very good reason, without a lot of thought of what are they going to waste their precious moments on, their precious seconds on. So that is not a throwaway scene. Mm-hmm. That is not a throwaway line. And now that the Fantastic Four is safely back in the arms of Marvel/Disney, and that Namor is a known antagonist to the Fantastic Four, I really do think they are setting up not only Namor and the Submariner, but the Fantastic Four as well. Mm-hmm. And I just that whole exchange, just the fact that they took those minutes to just have that exchange, and it seemed like pointless. Where is that going? Why even talk about that?
Right.
That is why, true believers, I do think that is Disney's Marvel's way of saying, hey, stay tuned. We're gonna have an underwater dude just like the DC guys.
Outstanding.
Everybody, mark your cards. The first prediction is out, and Aaron comes out strong and swinging with FF and Namor. I have no problem. I have no issues with any of that because especially if it turns out to be true, because those are two things that I love.
Absolutely. No. And you know, come on. This is Disney, who we know loves money. And, you know, Disney, I'm sure execs all looked over and said, how much money did Aquaman make? A billion? I think we want a little piece of that market share. Don't we have an underwater guy? That's right. Yeah. The very first Marvel character, for those, again, another trivia note, who didn't know that, the Submariner made his appearance in a comic that would eventually become Marvel Comics. He is the very first Marvel Comics character ever introduced, is the Submariner.
I would love to, maybe not right this moment, but maybe in a future show, or maybe even online on the Gentleman Nerds website or the Facebook page, the Lobot Lounge, throw out your casting ideas. Who would be a good Namor?
Jason Momoa is taken.
Yeah.
Because I actually think Momoa would have been a fantastic Namor. He's got the scowl, the grimace, the growl, the attitude. I think
the Momoa eyebrows.
He's got
the eyebrows.
Oh my God, Momoa would have been freaking perfect.
How do you feel about them casting an Asian actor? Because he's got a very Asian look.
Namor has always had a sort of Asian look to him. Yeah. I believe it would be fantastic for them to cast. Again, a lot of these casting decisions when they were made are not the obvious. They didn't. What would say, with the exception of Benedict Cumberbatch,
right?
they normally don't cast the big A-list star. Now they become A-list stars after they're cast.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if Disney did a similar thing with a Namor casting, looked at a promising, very talented Asian actor that then they say, yep, that's it. That's our guy. That's Namor. Right. And then 5 years, 10 years from now, he's another, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or Chris Evans whoever. But I am inordinately and excited and anticipating a Fantastic Four movie. It is one of the very first superhero groups that I ever learned about as a kid. I was reading Fantastic Four comics before I knew of the existence of any of these other superhero groups, including the Justice League. I was a Marvel kid, although I was familiar with, you know, the Batman 60s TV show, and then of course Super Friends and cartoons. But I was picking up Fantastic Four comics when I was very, very young. So it has a special place in my heart. I think that's basically what the Incredibles ended up, you know, stealing the thunder of the Fantastic Four. But I would love, and unlike every other Fantastic Four and Marvel nerd out there, I am not that eager to see Dr. Doom on screen. I'm just not. Yeah. Give Dr. Doom a rest. Let's try Namor or somebody else as the villain.
I would counter only by saying I'd like to see Dr. Doom done right.
I don't need him for the first movie.
Maybe he's the post credits closer.
Yeah,
the
first movie.
Let's do a what if episode, and talk about this, because I have a way to make Dr. Doom awesome and cool. And I've got all sorts of Fantastic Four thoughts. I will share them with you, but different show.
Doom says we must continue with the Avengers.
Yes. Okay.
I love the fact he talks about it.
They do the updating, and in fact, isn't that where Black Widow finds out that in fact Hawkeye is going around brutally murdering drug dealers and gangsters?
Yeah. They I think Rhodey reports it to her, and she recognizes it. She knows who it is. They haven't had any contact with Clint. But you know, she's obviously cares about him and wants to find him. I want to now go to the most important part of the movie, and that is Scott Lang.
Yes,
Ant-Man. What the hell has happened to him? Where has he been? Well, at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, as true believers would know, he goes into the what's it called?
The quantum realm,
and. Everyone, Pym and Evangeline Lilly's character, Van Dyne, not Janet, but Lily. Thank you. And
Hope.
And Janet's there too because they rescued her. Right. So three of them. They get dusted by Thanos' snapshot, leaving poor Scott in this
the quantum realm.
The quantum realm. He's stuck. He can't get out. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the MVP of Endgame is Lucky the Rat. Yes,
Lucky the Rat. It was that rat
who just happens. I mean, that it strains credulity, but it's a comic book movie, and I'm willing to go with it. But really, think about it. If it wasn't for Lucky, none of this would be possible. So let's raise our glasses to Lucky the Rat.
Ching ching ching.
Ching, you know.
Cheers to Lucky.
Cheers to Lucky. And thank you. We get Scott Lang. He pops back up again. And we have a sequence of him in San Francisco basically walking around going, what the hell happened? You know, for him.
It's only been a few hours.
Yeah. And so, good God, it's terrifying. And it's also, it looks like The Walking Dead. The streets are covered in abandoned cars and things are blowing through. And there's, you know, it's horrible.
Yeah, you'd think they would have cleaned that up by now. But yeah, okay, that's fine. 5 years later, and there's still abandoned cars in the streets.
At least there's not like trash cans with fire in them. At least they skewed that one.
That's right.
But so, of course, Scott goes to his daughter's house. Begging, he's trying to find her name on a big plaque of a fallen, and he can't, and he's panicked, and he rushes to the house, and 5 years have passed.
He finds his name on there.
That's right. Yeah.
And he realizes that they think he's dead. So right. that's what makes that. So you know, and of course they would. I mean, why wouldn't they? Right? Like he didn't show up. It's like he wasn't ever there. So I thought that was a really cool wrinkle. Yeah. To throw into this, you know.
Now let me ask you, because there was some discussion among this with my other group of friends. The kid on the bike that he says, "Hey kid, what happened?" And the kid just looks at him and rides off. That's the same kid that's at the funeral at the end, correct? That's the same boy.
No,
that's not.
It's not
because it looked just like him.
It is not. Like, and I know who that kid at the end is.
Okay, good.
Okay,
let's get there.
Because we know. I know who he is too. I thought the kid on the bike was also that same kid.
I have no idea who that kid at the end is, but we'll talk about that. We will. Because I'm curious as hell. I saw him. I was like, "Who the hell is that?" Okay, moving on. The reunion between Scott and his daughter is great because she has grown up in 5 years.
Yeah,
and there's a moment of, oh my god, you know, look at you. You know, you don't see your daughter for 5 years, and the last time we saw her, she was this little girl, and now she's, you know, a teenager. It's stunning. And then we get the whole Scott reunited with the Avengers moment where he comes to the Avengers compound, and they think it's a recording, but it's really him, and he comes in, and it's Ant-Man, me, and he has this crazy idea about the quantum realm and time. And they proselytize a bit about time travel, which is kind of fun. Whereas War Machine goes on a barrage of time travel movies, listing the rules of time travel.
In fact, I think Scott even calls it a Time Heist, which is the name of a Doctor Who episode.
Oh, right. Yeah. But it's an interesting theory, because if we can go through time, we can sort of manipulate the quantum realm and appear in different areas of time, then we might have something. We might have a way to get everyone back. We might have a way to beat Thanos.
Right, now, to undo all this.
To undo it all. Here's the thing, folks. I'm not going to get into the time travel thing. There's been so many papers and essays and examinations written on the illogical aspect of going through this time travel loop through the quantum realm. I'm not even going to approach it. It's a comic book movie. I'm good with it. What do you guys think?
Oh, no, I agree. I think there's, if you all want to see any kind of discussions or arguments about whether the time travel elements in Endgame work or didn't work, turn on any social media that you want and somebody somewhere is bitching about it. I mean, that's just a fact. And that's why, you know, I posted something along the lines of like, look, you know, were you entertained? Because time travel is never going to make sense. It's just not.
Right.
But were you entertained? If you were entertained and the rules were fairly consistent, then that's all that matters. You know, whether there might have been a little hole here, a little hole there, it doesn't bother me as much. I don't care about that kind of stuff. As long as the bigger story engaged me, the characters engaged me, their decisions I found compelling. Whether time travel works exactly the way somebody envisions it or not, well, that's neither here nor there.
I think there's I think that time travel discussion that basically ends with Scott Lang saying, you know, so Back to the Future is bullshit, is the explanation that they give. Mm-hmm. And I love, you know, and the thing is they've had a multiverse now for a while. So that's nothing new. So it makes more sense that they would use the multiverse than a linear timeline, because they've done that in the past, but the multiverse really opens up more storytelling options for them. You know, there is going to be a What If show on the Disney app. Right. And so what better What If excuse could you have than, you know, I'm the watcher. We're going to go look at some things in the quantum flux, you know? Yeah.
Although we don't know whether he's lying or not, he probably is. The new Spider-Man trailer makes it clear that Disney is already incorporating the idea of alternate Earths, because Mysterio claims that he comes from an alternate Earth.
Bullshit.
We all know that it's Mysterio. So, but the fact that it's believable enough that Fury is going along with it. Sure. It does very much say, oh yeah, Disney intended to have that there all along. This is something they were talking probably about for years and years and years. And of course, in Marvel Comics, there is a multiverse, an alternate Earth. And I for one had no problems with how the time travel element was handled in Endgame.
Especially since it opens up such fun aspects of this movie in the next chapters that are coming up.
Right.
We do get incredible fan service. We do get love letters to past movies, situations, things that we've treasured over the years. We get to revisit them from a different point of view, as Ben Kenobi would say.
Right.
And I really like that. But the problem is they need a really smart guy to help navigate that. And there's only one really smart guy who fits that bill. That they have an idea to go see, and that of course is Tony
Doc
Stark.
Bruce Banner.
Not quite. No, he was.
Oh, sorry.
To him too.
Hold on. I'll get there. Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
Oh my God.
Iron Man. Okay. He fights and fights with repulsor rays. So they go to see. They go to see Iron Man. They go to see Tony Stark, who is settled in with Pepper Potts with a beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
They have a child. And he's, you know, living the life, I guess. He's still probably really tore up about the entire thing, but he has suppressed it to the point where he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to see any of the Avengers. He's just done. He's done.
Yeah.
He's made it very clear that, you know, oh, you're here for dinner? Great. We're not going to talk shop. If you're talking shop, you're outing.
Yeah.
You can stay for lunch if you don't talk about shop. That's great. Right. Yeah.
Because they bring it up. And Tony's like, are you talking about time travel? You know, and he basically, she shoots them down like a Dayglo bomber because he's super smart. He knows it's not going to work. Forget it. Not going to work. Not going to work. Not going to, wait a minute.
It could work.
That's Tony. That's totally Tony. Because he's on something and he's going to keep thinking about it. And he's going to keep thinking about it. Nah, you know what? Friday, run this program just for fun. It's not going to work. Son of a bitch, it worked. You know, that's Tony. But prior to that, obviously, because he sends them away, he says no. They do go to see the other smart guy in the room, Bruce Banner. Who? Go ahead, Mark.
Belted by gamma rays, turns
isn't
into
it glamour
the Hulk.
I love that's my favorite part. Isn't it glamour rays? I am gonna give my first and probably only critique. Okay. Of this movie. As much as I loved smart Dr. Hulk, they're not quite there with the CGI. He looked like Gumby. He looked like a CGI character desperately trying to interact in a live action set. Mm-hmm. And although it wasn't so egregious that it pulled me out of the scene, every time Dr. Hulk would show up, I would look at him and say, yeah, he looks like Gumby. it didn't quite work for me. You know, and I haven't had this objection about any of the other characters. Not Thanos, not Groot, not anybody else. That is CGI.
Right.
But my God, for some reason, that chubby little Mark Ruffalo face on Hulk, it just didn't quite work for me.
I was seeing more Shrek myself. But.
Right. Well, Shrek, right. I said Gumby, but yes, yeah, Shrek is a much better example.
Let me ask you, did you have a problem with the Hulk in Thor Ragnarok?
No. When he was Hulk, no. No,
yeah. I didn't. Okay, I'm just curious because to me, because it looked the same to me as what he looked like in Hulk Ragnarok or Thor Ragnarok. Now, I will say this, of course.
Maybe we entered a little into the Uncanny Valley territory. Maybe, because the Hulk in Ragnarok was still monstrous enough, he was still non-human enough that I'm like, okay, it's the Hulk. Great, it's the Hulk. But then again, he's also in the same movie with a big rock guy. So it's not like,
right.
You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a big rock guy and it's a weird insect dude and it's Hulk. But,
I agree with you that Mark Ruffalo's face on the Hulk was a little jarring.
Yeah.
And it might've just been that they needed to do that to sort of sell the idea of the merged personalities.
Right.
Which is right out of the comics, by the way.
Do you think they adjusted his? I mean, yes. I know Mark Ruffalo did the motion capture for Hulk in all the movies.
Right.
It was always him. But they softened him because he wasn't angry, making angry face. Right. He was calm and relaxed, so he took on a much more. Oh my God, it's Mark Ruffalo's face.
Right.
That's what I see more than anything else. Mm-hmm. His soft-spoken voice, his humor, you know, his appetite. Of course, is Hulk appetite sized.
Right.
Okay, I will go with Aaron on this one, and I'm going to give the critique that I've been dying to give since I first saw this, and has nothing to do with the special effects. That didn't bother me. What bothered me was just the character of Professor Hulk. I do not like Professor Hulk. I never have in the comic books, in any media. I want my Hulk big, mean, screaming, destroying Hulk smash. Leave puny humans. Leave Hulk alone. That's my Hulk. I get that they're going with a kind of a evolution here with him. And I'll talk more about this as we talk more about the movie. But I thought, okay, fine. He's Professor Hulk. Great. It's going somewhere. We're going to get something here. We're going to get something later on. Something's going to happen. It's going to. And for me, it never does.
Right.
And I'll talk again about this when we get to things at the end.
I actually think part of it is that I think what Joseph said just made it click for me. He was too much Mark Ruffalo. He was too much Banner, and it was Banner that looked like Hulk.
Yeah,
I think that, if they had made him actually Dr. Hulk, where he doesn't sound just like Mark Ruffalo, he doesn't have the soft features of Mark Ruffalo. It's Hulk, but he is much better. Well, he's well spoken. He may still be gruff. He may still, like, you know, get mad at certain things, but it's not Mark Ruffalo going, oh, I don't know, hey, have a taco. These are really good. Have you tried that? This is yummy.
Yeah.
And except he's in the Hulk's body. Right. And I think that's part of the Shrek thing.
Yeah.
Oh, look, he's like Shrek. He's cute and green.
That's a good point, too. If they would just have changed his voice, just modulated his voice lower and give him a more of a lower tone on his voice, maybe. It would have been a little bit easier to go with, you know?
Right. Like if something, you know, when he's fiddling around with the machine and it's not working the way he wants, if he, you know, that moment of like, and he bangs on the thing and then goes like, oh, like, oops, I shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
You know, again, it was too much Jekyll and not enough Hyde. If you're truly combining the two, mm-hmm. I need to see 50% Hyde and 50% Jekyll. And that wasn't there. It was like 90% Jekyll.
Mm-hmm. The thing that they did in the comics that worked was whenever Peter David merged their personalities. He had Banner's intelligence, but he also had the Hulk's strength and ferocity. And so there's several scenes or several comics where he's working with the Pantheon where, you know, he gets out there and is doing the fighting. And I think one of his teammates says, you seem to really like that. And he's like, yeah, I didn't before, but now that I can control it, I do, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, I think that was probably missing. Oh, but right. I also think that this is something I have a theory with where this is going, and we can mm-hmm. talk about that as well. I think there's a reason why he's where he is right now. So anyways,
because you think he might, cause they even put the dot on the exclamation point in the scene where they're back in New York and Ruffalo kind of walks up and he kind of he hits something,
half-heartedly
punches, and then he kind
something.
Of pushes yeah. something else, yeah. and that's exactly that was the point. It's like you now just look like the Hulk, but otherwise you're Mark. I should say Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner, yeah.
So anyway,
no, you're absolutely right. And the thing for me with the Jekyll and Hyde thing that you brought up. And I was fine with it at first. I thought, oh, this is cute. That's funny. Oh, can we get a picture? Yes, absolutely. And they had a whole thing with a selfie and the fans, ooh, you know, Hulk smash. And that guy, oh, that was cute. But I thought eventually, though, in the midst of all the battle that's going to come, in
right.
the hardships and the pain, he's going to lose his shit, pardon me, Cap. And he's going to go full on Hulk, and it's going to be beautiful because he's going to have that moment. And it never happened. And that yeah. really annoyed me. Yeah. It really annoyed me. Okay. We'll get there. So Hulk's on board, Professor Hulk. He says, fine, we'll work on it. And they do. They construct some kind of a time quantum device, and they do some funny testing where Scott Lang goes into the quantumverse and comes back as a baby. And
that actually is a funny sequence. That's a really cute sequence.
It is cute. And there's a lot of moments like that, too. Like when Rocket and Nebula arrive at the Avengers compound, and Scott's sitting outside trying to eat his taco, and the ship blows his taco to pieces, and they walk up, and Nebula says, you know, just a FYI, he said, warning, there's an idiot sitting on the porch, and then the very nice moment where Hulk comes out, and it was like a Pepsi commercial of some kind. You're like, right, he walks out,
kid.
He looks down at him, and he smiles, and he gives him a couple of tacos. Yeah,
here's some more tacos.
Well, that's cute.
Yeah, that was.
But
that
then they take the journey to find Thor. And now we're going to discuss major change.
I have so much to say about this, but go ahead.
Other major change.
You do not understand how many social media arguments I have gotten into.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Just to intro him, we see Thor at arguably a low point. He's let himself go physically. He's let himself go emotionally. He doesn't really care because it's all guilt and post-traumatic stress disorder,
totally.
Really. The guy's totally traumatized over the events of what happened, and he can't face it. Valkyrie's alive. Yay.
Yeah.
Korg is alive. Yay. And his little bug buddy, I forget his name, but he's with her too.
Reek.
Yeah, right. Gleek or...
Reek.
Or, anyway.
Yeah.
They're all there, and they have a new Asgard. And the new Asgard is you know, trying
which
to...
Which is in Norway, which is a nice touch. It's a nice touch.
Why not? I like the approach that they have when they drive up and Hulk's sitting in the back of... Professor Hulk sitting in the back of the truck. I thought that was kind of cute. But we see Thor, and he looks like... Let's face it, folks, he looks like the Big Lebowski. I mean, even Stark calls him Lebowski later on. He's unkempt and grossly overweight and you know, drinking nonstop. Absolutely. Even a god... if he does that, would look like that, I suppose.
Right.
He's less Thor and more Dionysus now. He looks a little more like Bacchus. He's enjoying himself quite a bit because he's drowning all his sorrows. He's drinking them all away.
All right.
All right, let's talk about Thor.
All right, so there seems to be, and I don't even know if it's an equal split or not, but there is a vocal group, and by the way, I can see their point, that hate Lebowski Thor because they feel it is setting up an overweight character, a heavy character, as a clown, as a source of amusement and mockery, you know, and so it's making fun of the fat guy.
Whoa.
Right. And so I can see nothing that is further from what Marvel is trying to do. They are not making fun of the fat guy. They are pointing at Thor, who from the very beginning, when he's introduced, you know, we see that he is chiseled. One of the characters even says, oh my God, for a homeless guy, he is cut. Mm-hmm. Every time Thor takes his shirt off, women swoon in the audience. You know, the guy's vain. He's arrogant. He's self-assured.
And he's also a man of prodigious appetites.
Correct.
He feasts whenever he wins a battle. He drinks like a Norse god would, you know?
Right. And so to me, his outer appearance is very much reflects what his inner state of mind is. Mm-hmm. He considers himself perfect in appearance, in body, in shape, in temperament. In intelligence, you know, the guy, and we see this even in Ragnarok, right, where he becomes much more of a humorous character, But the arrogance, the self-assuredness, the cockiness are all still there. And so I think nothing would show in a character like that, nothing would show how low he has been brought, as well as the deterioration of not only his mental state with the whole PTSD and the depression and the anxiety, but the fact that he no longer even cares about his physical appearance. It doesn't matter to him anymore. And so, like the rest of us, thank God, right? That's one of the reasons why the Vikings love Thor. Because in the myths, Thor is the most like them. You know, they can't really relate to Odin. They can't really relate to Loki. They can't relate to any of the other Norse gods. But oh my God, Thor, he loves to drink. He loves to eat. He gets mad when people insult him. He can be arrogant. He can be petty. He's jealous. He is the most anthropomorphic of the Norse gods.
He's also easily tricked too.
Yes, exactly. He is the butt of jokes all the time. Mm-hmm. When they steal his hammer, you know, the gods convince him to dress up like a woman in drag and go to the wedding pretending to be Freya in a wedding gown with a veil and sit down until the groom can come in and lay Mjolnir on the bride's lap. You know, the Norse would have been hearing this story and laughing their goddamn ass off. This is like, ha ha ha, what a buffoon. Right, exactly. It is not incongruous with the source material at all. But even aside from the source material, because somebody pointed out, he's not Norse. He's not the Norse myth Thor. He's a Marvel Comics Thor. Got it. Perfect. No problem. I think what we see happening to Thor makes him relatable. It humanizes him in a way that all the other previous movies had not. Thor was always more of a figure. Thor was always more of an icon, but now Lebowski Thor is like, oh yeah, guess what? If I don't exercise and if I eat powdered donuts and drink a lot and sit around playing video games, I'm going to get fat just like Thor. Yeah. And so I mean, again, if somebody feels that they didn't like Fat Thor because it's making fun of the fat guy, great. I'm not going to say those feelings are invalid. They have a valid point of view. I respect that. I can see why they feel that way. I just happen to not feel that way. I see a very different Thor when I see Lebowski Thor. And then especially what Lebowski Thor goes through, because that's another important thing. If he was just constantly the fat guy in the background that everybody's laughing at, that would be one thing. But he's not. We get to see him interact with his mom. We get to see him go back to Asgard. We get to see him try to call Mjolnir again, not even knowing if Mjolnir will come to him. And it does. All these moments, to me, add up to an amazing arc for this character, rather than, oh, he's just a clown. He's just a fat clown.
Right. If he had been a one-note joke, that would have been more upsetting.
Right.
Obviously, he was played for laughs. There was a lot of humor, you know, what's coursing through your blood right now? Cheese whiz? I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff that they got a chance to
And
to
are they about. Are they telling fat jokes? Yes, they are. They are telling a lot of fat jokes. But
I'm gonna say two things real quick. I don't even think we have to go that deep. I think Thor is Brad Pitt at the end of Seven. In this movie, you know, he is the instrument of wrath. He's the entire first half of this story, the entire movie of Infinity War. We begin with the slaughter of his people and the death of his brother. And he says, you are going to die for that. And so at no point in time, and when he goes to make a weapon, they say, what kind? He says, the Thanos killing kind. There was never a point that I thought he wasn't going to try and end Thanos' life, in so much as the movie would give us. But then we find out at the beginning of Infinity War, or of Endgame, that's exactly what he does. And he does the thing that we hope he does. And as soon as he does it, we don't feel good about it. Neither does he.
Exactly. And it brings him no joy. It brings him no closure. Right. It brings him none of the things he thought he would experience when he finally was able to kill Thanos.
So yeah, traumatized was he that he can't even hear the name. When Professor Hulk says the name, Thor gets visibly upset and says almost in a whisper, do not say that name.
Right.
You know, it's that level of PTSD.
It's totally that. And I don't think, regarding the humor, which I think is situational and character based, and also deeply rooted in character. Iron Man has always been slightly insulting to everybody.
Oh yeah,
I don't think any of that. Here's the deal: you can't have a movie where half of the universe dies at the beginning, including characters that we love and adore, and you can't have 3 hours of funeral march. Right. You know, there's got to be some light moments. Right. And so, I think that's just the nature of storytelling, especially cinematic storytelling. You can't be one note. Right. So
they already went there with Ragnarok. We already have seen
a
Thor in Ragnarok who was very different from the very first Thor movie, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think we were already going there with the humor, and with the kind of character that Thor was. But then you're right. Then you add on top of that layer of tragedy, and you know, what are they? Nothing is as sad or as funny as a clown. And I think that's true. I think Thor is going through is the most outwardly manifesting example of trauma. You know, of PTSD. He is not only showing you that by his behavior, he's showing you that with his appearance as well.
Right. But when he hears that there might be hope, when they bring to him, we can fix this. We have a thing we can do. Reluctantly, call it what you will, he does. He goes. Now, you know, he's still the butt of a lot of jokes as we go through this. He still has this great arc, and that really comes to a head when he returns to Asgard, which he does through the amazing ability of the quantum realm. Now, we're getting into their great plan. Tony has come up with it. He knows how to manipulate it. They've got quantum suits on. One last gathering, we have to get Ronin. We have to go get Hawkeye, and who better to get him than Black Widow.
Yeah.
And there's a touching moment where they hold hands. And you talked about anchors, Mark. I think Black Widow is now his anchor, or at least an anchor as far as he can, something he can cling to.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to cling to something.
Yeah.
Their relationship is reversed. He's the one that pulls her out of the wet work initially. Mm-hmm. And now she's the one that's got to go get him, which is, you know, a wonderful, again, in terms of storytelling, you know, it doesn't work better any other way, you know?
Yeah. Rocket is there. Nebula is there. Rhodey is there. Pepper's there. They're all working on this time machine, for lack of a better word, that they can all go and gather the stones. The point is, and there's a great sequence of them all brainstorming. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to find these stones? Where was that stone? It was at this point in time, and it was there. Wait a minute. There was a place where there were three stones in one location. That's right. The Battle of New York. We got to go back there. They start making all these lists of where they can get it. We do know that Jane, Thor's ex, was injected with the red. What was that stuff called? The second Thor movie.
The dark matter, yeah.
The dark matter, thank you, which we come to find out was actually a stone in liquid form. Okay, sure. They have to go extract that from her. They have to go to the Battle of New York. They have to, you know, gather them all together again. The stones, the idea is to get the stones. Now, of course, we know the Soul Stone is going to be on Dathomir, the name of the planet is on. So they have to go there to... And of course, we know where the Power Stone before Star Lord picks it up at the beginning of Guardians. So they have to go back to that planet as well. So they've got a plan, and they're all mapping it out, and they're going to launch into separate little missions to go and retrieve these stones. And of course, the goal is to reverse the Snapture. And unfortunately, the goal is going to have to wait until our next episode because get that stupid glowy eye thing happening here.
I don't miss Maximilian. I don't miss Maximilian.
Well, he missed you because he was actually still here, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's not considered a living thing for purposes of the snap,
that's
unfortunately.
Right. So he was here. I was here. Dr. Gonzo was here. And, you know, maybe one or two creepy guys that we haven't been introduced yet hanging out in the corner of the lounge. That was it, guys. It was really lonely. I'll just go ahead and say it. But we will return to this, ladies and gentlemen, in our next episode. So fear not, we've got lots more to talk about for Avengers Endgame. This episode of the Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and was written by Aaron DiArrive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by Lucky the Rat. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs, with backup by Lucky the Rat. Promotional materials, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick and Lucky the Rat. Our Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Happy Hogan.
Lucky the Rat.
No, oh, Happy Hogan. No, we won't let that rat make drinks. Come on. That's ridiculous. Thank you, Happy. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron DiArrive. Kevin Feige produces...
Feige?
Is it pronounced Feige?
Kevin Feige.
Kevin Feige produces Avengers Endgame, and Anthony and Joe Russo are the directors. Luis Di Esposito, Victoria Alonso, Michael Griot, Trin Tran, John Favreau, and Stan Lee are the executive producers. Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely wrote the screenplay, and Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Bluehost and Lucky the Rat. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. We're going to finish with our end game discussion. And always remember to tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. Last words, Mark.
Can't wait to get to the end and predictions. Looking forward to what comes next.
Yes, Aaron.
Loki lives.
And I'm Joseph Latinos, reminding you that, yes, Red Skull still lives.
Kree-Skrull War is very possible, and there's another possibility that you guys haven't considered, and that's Kang the Conqueror. And screwing with time travel, and moving stuff around, that's a Kang thing, man.
That's awesome, actually.
For that matter, if we do bring Namor in, and they do bring the Fantastic Four in, it could be a big confrontation between the surface world.